aerospace and defense manufacturing.
Machines and automation.
Additive manufacturing.
Smart manufacturing.
A global manufacturing economy.
Welcome to Advanced Manufacturing Now, the podcast for manufacturing professionals, powered by SME. From the design screen to the shop floor to final assembly, we drive the conversation about making manufacturing smarter by connecting people who are passionate about manufacturing. Visit us at SME.org.
Hello, and welcome to Advanced Manufacturing, the podcast for manufacturing professionals. I'm your host, Bruce Morey, Senior Technical Editor for Manufacturing Engineering Magazine. Our topic today is digital transformation and how to implement it in your company. The future of your business is more reliant on strategic initiatives centered on digitizing even the most common manufacturing processes like quoting, shop floor execution, and manufacturing management. As digital technologies become more prevalent, having a digital strategy and action plan allows you to reach your customers more effectively. Joining me today to discuss this topic is Jason Ray, co-founder and CEO of Paperless Parts. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You know, before we dig into the meat of this conversation, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself and your company?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to. So my background is military. I was a Navy Supply Corps officer, logistician, and I came to the manufacturing industry in a little bit of a circuitous way. I got to be on the front lines experiencing the challenges associated with not having the parts we needed to operate our ship and our mission in the way that we were being directed to. And as I started to dig in, you know, my perception, which I believe is the reality, is that the United States has one of the world's most advanced industrial bases. And the big question that I kept stumbling on is, well, if we have the most advanced industrial base in the world, why is it so challenging to get seemingly simple components so that we can go out and execute our mission? And that was really the thing that started to fuel my fire for getting into the manufacturing space. And I set out on a mission to understand why it was so difficult to get those parts. And that took me down several different paths. It took me to the Pentagon, and I had the opportunity to work on and help build the Navy's additive and advanced manufacturing strategy. I got to learn a ton about different advanced manufacturing capabilities, whether it's automation or 3D printing. And it led me to wanting to buy a job shop. So my thought process was, if I can go and I can buy one of these job shops, what I can do is I can build a manufacturer that is super responsive, that is able to solve these supply chain problems, and I can, you know, be the world's next best defense contractor. And really, as I peeled back the onion on all of this, it came back to one core concept, which is accessibility. We've designed paperless parts to help manufacturers make themselves more accessible to customers. Because it doesn't matter what capabilities you have. You could have the most advanced capabilities in the world. But if a customer cannot access those capabilities, it might as well be as if those capabilities do not exist. And the starting point for access is a quote. And so we've designed paperless parts to be a sales and quoting tool that is designed to help manufacturers quickly and effectively communicate with their customers.
It sounds like this is more than an ERP system. So that begs the question, if it's true, is if I already have an ERP system, why do I need to use paperless parts?
You know, it's an awesome question. It's a question that we get all the time. ERP systems, paperless parts is not more than an ERP system. It's just different than an ERP system. ERP systems today primarily focus on inside the four walls of a manufacturing operation. It's about operational efficiency. It's about tracking. It's about getting parts through your shop or getting jobs through your shop in the most efficient way possible. And it's about being able to account for whether those were profitable or not profitable. And it's being able to create a schedule around all of that. It's enterprise resource planning. Well, as ERP systems have evolved, the demands of job shops have said, well, you have to be able to do all things. So the ERP companies went out and they created accounting suites and they created vendor management and they created quoting. And these tools exist, but they're not optimized for the function that they are serving. They are optimized to support the goal of the ERP system, which is once an order is won, we want to take that part through our shop in a way that promotes efficiency and quality and resource planning. So what Paperless Parts does is we bolt onto the front of the ERP system. We integrate with almost a dozen ERP systems today. Most of our customers have ERP integrations, and we focus on outside the four walls. How do you communicate and collaborate effectively with customers? How do you provide design for manufacturability feedback? How do you quickly and accurately price components and send those quotes back? How do you make it very easy for your customers to reach you and request a quote? How do we automate as many of the steps in that quoting process from RFQ to order as possible so that the very skilled people today that are often pushing the buttons, dialing those knobs in, don't end up spending as much time on every quote? Because what we found is that manufacturers spend a lot of time today over-engineering quotes for work that they never win. And that is a product of the tail, the ERP system, wagging the dog a little bit. And that's forcing manufacturers to put together a quote and do that work in the quoting process in a very manual way that feeds the ERP system's end goal.
So what you're saying is the ERP system is shaping the work that they do, much of which may be redundant or not needed if they don't win the quote.
And I wouldn't say that it's not necessarily needed. What I'm saying is that it can be very much automated. And there's a lot of incredible things that we can do using logic around a core premise that Paperless Parts is built around. And that's that in manufacturing, the geometry of what you are producing drives everything. So whether that's the number of holes dictating, you know, how long a part is going to be run on a machine, whether it's the dimensions of that hole dictating the type of drill bit you're going to use, whether it's a flat part, we figure out if it's going to be punched or stamped or if it's going to be laser cut, whether it's, you know, you name it, the geometry is driving every decision. Even in the littlest ways, the overall size of the part dictates the size of the raw material. So what we try to do, and where Paperless Parts has a lot of power and automation, is we try to build those correlations for manufacturers so that when they're quoting something, there's an incredibly high level of efficiency. If we see this, then it means that. As soon as those rules are in place, there is no ambiguity around what you're going to be quoting. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to create a centralized quoting process that eliminates the ambiguity and those tribal knowledge. You know, I'm just guessing off the back of my 30 years of experience, which no one else is going to be able to replicate. And we're trying to build that into a structured process. So that's how we work with the ERP systems to make sure that a shop is successful. And then when an order is won, we end up passing all of that data right into the ERP system so that the job can be effectively kicked off.
It sounds like it's very data intensive. Is there something special about the way you retain the data?
So our system is basically an estimating tool that's wrapped around a geometric pricing engine. So a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, you're a cycle time calculator. We are not a cycle time calculator. We are a tool that allows you to use the geometry of the part to drive towards things like cycle times or drive towards things like raw material cost. My goal is not necessarily to create an instant quote, but it's to put the guardrails in place that allow people to very quickly focus on the most skilled requirements in the quoting process. So rather than an estimator who's got 30 years of experience spending time figuring out what outside services should cost or figuring out, you know, how many setups are on a part, they can focus very specifically on, okay, well, I see critical tolerances. Those critical tolerances are not called out on the 3D model. So that's going to impact our cycle time in this way. So my goal is automation with a human touch. I don't think you can pull the human element out of it today.
So with this automation, do you read in things that are models defined in terms of AP 242 or other kinds of CAD models that have definitions attached to them?
It's an awesome question. And our system will do that, but we just don't see those files today. So typically what I get is a base step file with no GD&T, so no tolerancing, nothing else included in it. And I get a print, a PDF 2D drawing associated with it as a supporting file.
Really?
Yes. Oh, over a million files loaded into our system. We're talking drastically less than 1% have we even seen those files. They just do not exist today.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, that leads to my next question now then is paperless parts, since you do a lot of DoD work, is it ITAR and NIST compliant?
Yeah, about 50% of our customers today are doing some form of Department of Defense work, whether that's directly with the government or with companies like the large OEMs, you think Lockheed, Northrop, Boeing. And paperless parts is ITAR compliant. We are NIST compliant. And we are set up on Amazon GovCloud to make sure that all of the data is stored and protected and backed up in a way that is consistent with the requirements of the Department of Defense. So our system is designed to help job shops reduce risk. Risk comes into play every time they send an ITAR file out to their plater or out to a secondary or outside service vendor, and they happen to not encrypt that email. That is technically exposing export controlled data because you do not know where that data lived. And so to help with that, we built a system that is very similar to Dropbox, but for 3D and 2D CAD. And you can go into paperless parts now and you can securely share files with your outside service vendors, with your customers, without having to worry about the risk of exposing ITAR data.
Interesting. Well, that leads to another question I think that our readers really, or listeners really want to know about. And that is, what industries does paperless parts really serve?
So when you say industries, some folks define industries as aerospace and defense and medical and marine and different verticals. Our customers work across every single one of those industries, whether it's semiconductors, medical devices, industrials, on-road, off-road, aerospace. What we do is we work with manufacturing, different types of manufacturers. So CNC machine shops, precision screw shops, fabricators, sheet metals, stamping, punching. We work with those types of shops, and we're agnostic about where that part is going to end up.
Is it fair to say that the companies that you work with are smaller in some sense? I mean, you don't, maybe not Boeing's, but like the tier threes or mom and pop machine shops?
You know, it's an awesome question. When we started this company, our first customers really fell into that zero in revenue all the way up to about $5 million in revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would make sense.
Since then, we've evolved dramatically. And now our largest customers are doing tens all the way up to billions of dollars in revenue a year.
So you started out with the small people. Serve their needs, the big guys saw what you were doing and say, hey, I want a piece of that.
That's exactly right. And the platform has evolved, and there are different tiers of paperless parts that are designed specifically to meet the needs of each shop. So we wanted to make sure if you're doing $5 million in revenue, we've got the right tool for you. If you're doing $50 million in revenue, we have the right tool for you. And if you're doing $500 million in revenue, across five different locations, well, we have the right tool for you. And that's the goal of our system. We don't a lot of shops say, a lot of software companies will say, hey, you know, I don't want to work with the little guys anymore. It's harder to implement. They don't spend enough money, blah, blah, blah. Well, we built this company to support manufacturers. That's the smallest manufacturers all the way up to the largest manufacturers. And one of the things, and you know, this going back to the theme of this conversation, but one of the things that we do that I think is completely unique in this industry is the way we implement our software and the way we work with our customers to ensure that they're driving success through the use of our tools. It used to be in manufacturing that you would get a 2-month implementation of your ERP system, and then they handed you the keys, and whether you knew how to drive the car or not, it was over. Mm-hmm. And what I think that's done is that's created this apprehensive nature in the industry towards adopting new software tools, because the last big implementation of a pivotal software tool did not go very well. Mm-hmm. And my belief in this space is that anybody can go out and write really good software. You can hire tons of software developers, you can spend years, you can write incredible software, but if no one can get up to speed and successfully use that software, you didn't create any value. You created nothing that helped the industry. So we're building a different kind of company here. And it's a company that stands by our customers and ensures that they are successful with our tools. And it also changes the paradigm of what manufacturers expect. Most manufacturers, they expect that that software will only change once a year. You know, you get your update of your CAM system, you get your update of your ERP system if you pay for it. Paperless parts, we're releasing new features and new capabilities every single week.
Well, that leads to my next question, which is obvious. So what's new at Paperless Parts, and what's the paperless viewer that I've been hearing about?
We're doing some really incredible things with how we make data accessible to manufacturers. And one of the things that we just released has to do with specifically how do we pull data out of 2D PDFs? Because what I find today is that a lot of shops, they're just getting the PDFs. And so they come to me and they say, well, Jason, how can you help me do something faster with PDFs? How can I access this information? How can I understand what I'm seeing here? So today, what we've done is we've made it so that you can pull every single word, every number off of a PDF, and it's completely searchable through an elastic search function inside of Paperless Parts. So what I find is that a lot of manufacturers start from scratch. So they'll start out and they'll quote a job like it's the first time they've ever seen this before, rather than going back and leaning on historical information. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make it much easier for manufacturers to go in and search. You know, when was the last thing that I had something electroplated? When was the last part that I made that was for this specific customer? Or let me just in general search for a specific tolerance. Where does that appear on another part? And did I end up having to grind that? What did that feature look like? So by being able to search all of the text on these PDFs, it is our first step towards unlocking an enormous treasure trove of data that lives inside of every manufacturing operation. And so you can come in and you could upload thousands of PDFs, and we can extract all of that data and now make it accessible to you in a whole new way. And that's the newest thing.
So you're talking about like a different way of doing model-based definition. Before they, you know, when I talk about model-based definition and stuff AP242, which is a model format to include things other than CAD geometry, you can bring in just the CAD geometry and those ancillary PDFs and automatically read the PDFs and then create a data model off of that. Did I get that right?
I can't go that far yet, but you're okay. you're foreshadowing what the future will hold. Today, okay. I can make that data searchable and accessible, which is the first step.
Okay.
The next step is going to be, how do I correlate something that's shown on a print to something that we're seeing in a 3D model? that's the level of innovation that we're taking to ensure that I don't ever want a manufacturer to miss on a quote. That's my goal.
Yeah.
Because when you miss, you often underquote and you win the job and you lose money. And that doesn't help anybody. It hurts the supply chain because it sets a false expectation around what the price should be for a component. It hurts you as a shop because it's immediately cutting your bottom line. And now forever into the future, you're either going to have to go back to that customer and say, look, we missed this tolerance, we missed this feature, and you know that makes us look like you can't trust us because we're not detail-oriented. Or now I have to ask you to pay me more, and you're pissed because I established an expectation with you that I wasn't able to meet. Now, everybody makes mistakes, but my goal is to help manufacturers not make those mistakes. Because frankly, if I can save you one mistake, that one mistake will likely pay for paperless parts for the entire year.
You know, before we started this podcast, you talked about a buyer survey. Can you tell us a little bit more about the buyer survey and the results of that?
Absolutely. I always like to understand how buyer expectations are evolving and changing. And I think the role of buyers is changing. Now we have a much younger generation of buyers coming into these roles, and they're being given dramatically more to manage the procurements on. So maybe it was 200 line items that they were responsible for going to 500 line items. And that is simply a product of large OEMs saying, we're going to use more software for this, and we're going to use less bodies, and we're going to decrease our procurement cost. But what that ends up doing is it ends up changing the expectations on job shops. And I think that our manufacturers need to understand how those expectations are changing so that they can successfully meet them. So we went out and we surveyed buyers. Over 400 buyers responded to this survey, both prototype and production from almost every industry. So we've got a really broad swath here. What's really interesting about this is that the results were very consistent. So not only do buyers find suppliers online, which should be a no-brainer for people because, hey, if I can't find you on Google, you probably don't exist or there's something wrong with your business. So they're going online. But the thing that really stood out to me is that referrals, 46% of buyers said that the second most common way that they are finding new suppliers is through a referral.
I mean, like a person-to-person referral.
Yeah.
Well,
and that is really interesting.
In the digital world, it is interesting.
So now it's, well, what are buyers looking for? How does a shop make sure that they are the right shop that the suppliers choose? So we asked the question, how do you determine which suppliers you want to work with? And the thing that came back as a resounding response was the shop's capabilities. Almost 50% went back to capabilities. Now, you might say to me, that's a no-brainer. Of course, you know, I need to know what the capabilities are. But when you look at that in the context of the fact that buyers do not understand manufacturing in the same way that they used to, where your buyer would call you up and you'd been working with that person for 5 years and they knew exactly what parts they were buying and how those parts were made, that's gone. A lot of buyers can't even tell you what the parts look like that they're buying for.
Interesting.
So what does that mean for how a shop needs to communicate their capabilities to a buyer so that that buyer now understands that that's the right shop to go to? So there's something there. Shops need to be able to communicate their capabilities online effectively so that now buyers can find them and select them. I was really surprised too to see that 30% of the buyers look at a shop's social media accounts to determine credibility.
That doesn't surprise me.
I was surprised. I can't imagine going on and looking at like the shop owner's Twitter account, but it happens.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, actually. I think people are And that, I think it gets back to what you were saying earlier about that person-to-person contact. They want to know what other people are thinking. It's just that they have a different way of getting to that opinion.
The thing that was really validating for our business model that stands out to me is that across both prototype and production buyers, 67% of these people responded saying that they expect a quote in less than 24 hours from the request.
Oh my goodness. That's tough.
Even more than that, 6%, only 6%, were willing to wait longer than 3 days.
Wow. That puts a lot of pressure on the quoter.
Incredible pressure, right? And what does that mean then? Like, you can use that to frame up and prioritize the quotes you're working on. If a quote has been sitting in your inbox for 5 days, your chances of winning that job, if the buyer hasn't said, and obviously there's exceptions to every rule. The buyers might say, hey, you've got 2 weeks to respond. Well, then you've got 2 weeks to respond. But if there is no set window and a quote's been sitting in your inbox for 5 days, the likelihood that you are not going to win that job is extremely high.
Well, it just shows how the world is changing with both changing and not changing. It's certainly changing the expectations with the digital information that we can exchange back and forth, but there's still a need for a human element one way or another.
Well, and that comes back to, you know, what is changing? What's driving this need? And what's changing these expectations? So some people are like, oh, you know, the darn millennials, you know, it's just that generation, we got to work with that generation. Well, that's part of it for sure. We've grown up in an Amazon.com generation where I expect to be able to go online and get very quick quotes. But there are companies now that have taken that model and have reinforced that. So both 48% prototype and production buyers either always or at least often send their RFQs to modern sourcing networks like Xometry and Fictiv and MFG.com. That's an astounding number.
Yeah.
Sending requests for quotes to these networks that have tried to emulate the experience of Amazon.com.
Right. Which argues against the point I just made, is they're actually taking the human element out of it, right?
That's exactly right. But they are probably talking to their fellow buyers who are saying, oh, you got an urgent need? Don't waste time sending it out to 10 of these shops. Don't spend your time with that. Just go to Xometry, upload the parts, and you know, in seconds, you'll have an instant quote and you can get the thing on order. Because the way buyers are measured today, all these shop owners that I talk to, they're thinking price, 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 price. It's price. They're measured by price, getting the lowest price. That's not it. It's just not. Buyers are measured by, do they have everything on order that they're supposed to have on order? That's the first criteria. Second criteria is, are all of those things on order scheduled to be delivered on time in the time window that we've given you? We need these parts on a production line on this date, or the operation stops. The opportunity cost of those parts being there on time is drastically higher in most cases than the actual price of the parts.
Yeah, it's true, especially in the just-in-time.
Yeah, exactly. So that's two situations where a buyer's being measured not by price. The third is price. So it's, is it on order? Is it on order to be delivered on time? And were you able to source all of the parts you manage under the project's budget?
Wow, interesting.
It's just, and that's because more today than ever before, time has become a critical element. Time to market. Just-in-time manufacturing. As OEMs have tried to offload their inventories, saying, hey, I don't want to stock 5,000 of these parts in my warehouse so that my production line's always up. I want to get 1,000 of them a month, or I want to get 500 a week, whatever it ends up being. They're offsetting their cash burden, the cash they would have tied up in work in progress or in inventory, for a just-in-time system. Well, in that case, that's great, but the cost of that is speed. You have to have fast speed. And what we saw with COVID was supply chains break, and people are now able to look overseas and say, okay, well, maybe I was saving a dollar a part or $1 million a year by going over to China. But when my supply chain broke, it cost me 10 million bucks. So did I actually save money, or was the true total ownership cost of that decision drastically higher? And now we're starting to get some real data around what those supply chain disruptions have done to the industry.
Interesting. Well, you've certainly given us some insight into how the world is quickly changing into whatever it is going to be in the future, but it's got to be digital, is what you're saying.
I think so. I think it's time. And before, digital was not secure and digital was scary and the cloud was scary. But yeah. I think this industry has evolved so dramatically over the last 5 years that it is becoming the way to do business.
But, you know, despite that, the other thing I heard through this interview was, despite the fact that it's going to be digital and it's going to be an Amazon or parts out on the web, you know, the Xometries and so forth, there's still a human element that's absolutely critical to making sure that people have trust in what they're getting.
I believe so.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Jason.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
If our listeners wanted to learn anything more about your company, where on the web should they go?
Well, I would direct people to paperlessparts.com. Feel free, sign up for a demo. You can talk to someone on my team. There's no pressure here. We want to make sure that when you go through this process, we're evaluating what your shop and your business needs so that we can set you up for success. Not everyone's a fit for paperless parts, and paperless parts is not a fit for every single shop out there, but we're going to help you figure that out. And at the very least, through the process of evaluating paperless parts, I think you're going to learn a lot about your business.
Well, thanks again. To find more Advanced Manufacturing podcasts, visit us at advancedmanufacturingnow.com or search for Advanced Manufacturing on your smartphone's podcast link. As always, SME and SME Media can help keep you abreast of developments in automation, robotics, and smart manufacturing on our website, sme.org/latest-news. And be sure to review our webinar schedule for the rest of the year, available at the SME website in the Manufacturing Resource Center. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advanced Manufacturing Now. If you liked what you heard, feel free to share the show and head over to iTunes, where you can write a review and subscribe to keep up with future episodes. Don't forget, you can join the conversation and learn more at advancedmanufacturing.org.